Now on News Talk, continuing our documentary on News Talk series with a documentary originally broadcast on Spin 103.8, Rachel Ryan goes behind the headlines of the homeless crisis, hearing the stories of the men and women who are currently struggling to find a place to call home in Finding Home.
The word home is defined in the dictionary as the place where one lives permanently, especially as a member of a family or household. However, the word home can mean different things to different people.
Home, it's just a place where you kind of go and you've no worries.
Well, home means nothing at this stage. I mean, even most people that do get homes off the street end up, you know, losing their homes again, you know.
You don't want to cut your own place, like, you know what I mean? Pay your own rent and get your own shopping, like, you know what I mean? To keep coming to the soup runs here every day, like, to get fed, like, you know what I mean? Scandalous all this.
Well, I lived in a few countries before, and as long as you have somewhere clean, secure, that's all that you want, really.
Home is a roof over your head. You have a front door to get in, you have a key to get in.
The streets and the lads around, like, all the rest of that, I mean, that's home. It's the closest you ever want to get to home, like. You see the support between everyone on the streets, like, it's unreal, like. We all support each other, like. We all stand together, like.
It's a chance to get back on your feet and live a normal life, isn't it? You know? Better than the doorway.
The only place I ever felt like was home to me was the place I was in, Ballydowt. It's crazy that I think of a lockup as my home.
I have been a part-time volunteer with the Dublin Simon community for 5 years now. The people I've met and the stories they've told me are what inspired me to make this documentary.
I've been in a bleeding doorway every night and been there for the last couple of years and on and off, here, there and everywhere. So I depend on coming out here giving me sandwiches and tea every evening. You know, I wish that I wasn't doing this and I had my own place, but life is life and that is life.
In Ireland today, over 7,000 people have no place to call home. The latest Department of Housing figures show at least 3,337 adults and 1,091 families are in emergency accommodation across Dublin. These figures on homelessness, which always seem to be rising, have become a constant in news bulletins in recent years. But I want to take you behind the numbers and headlines. These are the stories of the men and women who have found themselves without a home, their reasons why, their struggles and hopes for a better future. Dublin Simon Community was founded in 1969 by a group of Trinity and UCD students who began handing out soup and sandwiches to people sleeping rough in the city. It has since grown into an organisation that provides help for thousands of people across Dublin. CEO of Dublin Simon is Sam McGuinness.
What we're trying to do is, first of all, prevent people from losing their homes. If we can do that, then the problem wouldn't be going up. The next thing is to help people attain a place of their own. And if we can get them to do that, so help people to get their own home, to get a place that they belong, to get a place that they have all their bits and bobs there, somewhere, whether that's in high support accommodation or some independent accommodation. Our focus now today is in helping people to attain their own accommodation, for to get their own premises and to make it into a home for themselves.
Getting people out of homelessness and into homes is key to Simon's mission statement. But for many, it's a long road, which can often start on the roads and streets of Dublin City. The small group, which started off handing out sandwiches to rough sleepers in the 60s, has grown into a 365-day-a-year soup run. Sarah Cooney has been volunteering with the soup run for over 2 years now. I caught up with her from Simon's base in Capel Street as the Monday night soup run team were preparing to head out into the city.
It totally opens your eyes. They're people and they don't have a place to live, so you have to be really respectful of them when you see them, and you meet all sorts of people who have terrible addiction problems, family problems, social problems, all these kind of different things, and you just have to, I suppose, treat them as you treat anybody.
Sometimes having a chat is all rough sleepers want, and often the soup run volunteers will be the only people they have to talk to all day. Volunteering on the soup run, you meet people from all over the world, of all ages, from all walks of life, each with their own story to tell. One Monday night during a run, we bumped into Simon on Dawson Street. He's been living on the streets for 4.5 years after being involved in an incident which led to him spending time in prison.
I got locked up and I got out. And then I took to the streets, my own choice. No hostels, not happening. I won't take a hostel. I was robbed in hostels. They said the hostels are the best place in the world. They're safe in them. I'm more safer on the streets.
A lot of the regular clients we meet on the Super Run won't go into the emergency hostels provided. Some are trying to keep clean and don't want to be around drug or alcohol use. Others have experienced violence or intimidation, so they choose to sleep rough instead.
That's what I have at the moment, a doorway and a decent shelter, and I'm kind of blessed in a way because there's a lot of homeless people that haven't got the shelter I have, but I'm lucky where I am, you know. When you're homeless, they have a different outlook on you. Oh, look at him, he's a homeless scumbag, he's a homeless tramp. We'll urinating him like an Irishman did to me one night in Henry Street. Some people putting a lighter to your sleeping bag and setting you on fire like they did to two of my mates on Halloween, you remember that? But that's what we put up with on the street.
Later on that evening, we met with Bernie near O'Connell Bridge. She's another client of the Super Run and has been placed in accommodation for the past 2 years, but still taps or looks for money regularly in the city. Bernie is also blind, which leads to extra challenges on the streets.
I'll tell you the truth, I've been beaten and attacked by strangers and gangs, left for dead. A lot of good friends know that I'm really blind, but I do get a lot of bullies picking on me. Don't mind her, she's not blind, she's a con artist, fake and a phony. I do get that as well. Years ago, there used to be a lot of workshops out there for disabled people. And because the government done away with them, there's nothing out there for any type of disabled person out there now. I got nervous for a while, I did. Walking around, I'd be stopping every time I'd be walking around, and people saying, Bernie, it's us, your friends, you know what I mean? And they'd have to guide me around and say, it's such and such, do you recognise my name? Because I had brain cancer about 2 years ago. And some weeks they talked to me and I wouldn't remember talking to them next day, and they'd tell me who they are and their names and all to me, you know what I mean? And sometimes I get lost in the city because of all the construction recently. And sometimes people will stop you and say, excuse me, can you help me? But a lot of people will ignore you. That's one thing I've noticed lately, even with a disability. Sometimes when they see you on your own, they'll actually come up and talk to you and they actually get to know you. You're actually a nice person and likes talking to people, you know what I mean?
Feeling ignored by the public is common with a lot of rough sleepers and something they bring up on Super Runs. We met Val on the Millennium Bridge. He's been homeless for 30 years and feels there is a misconception among the public about what it means to be homeless. But if you stop and ask, every homeless person has their own story to tell.
Lost three sisters in a house fire Christmas night when I was 11. So my mother and father broke up then when I was 11. So I went to live with my granny then. And then I went to England at 13 because I couldn't cope with it anymore. So I was 13, I was in London on the streets. I came back home here then at 17. People need somewhere to live, like, basically flats or whatever, like, you know, or need help getting flats, deposits, stuff. So when you're homeless, you get that. You're not entitled to that. And everyone has a story, like, people need to get to know them, like. Showing them into hostels and showing them here and there, but they need counselling. Like. You know what I mean? There's no counselling out there for anyone homeless. Like. But they don't want to know, like. So you're another homeless person, another junkie. You know what I mean? Just don't care, like. That's the way it's gone. You know what I mean? Instead of finding out, like, what really is going on.
A group whose job it is to find out what's really going on Dublin streets are Simon's Rough Sleeper team. Their job is to link in with homeless people across the city, providing needle exchanges, sleeping bags, and helping them engage with other Simon services, such as addiction treatment, emergency accommodation, or Simon's mobile health unit. I joined full-time volunteers Dermot and Lindsay and Martina Bergen, outreach worker with Dublin Simon's Rough Sleeper team, on one of their routes. We drove throughout the city and even the 5 kilometres out to Clontarf, linking in with regular clients for needle exchanges, general checkups, and for sleeping bags. We met two such clients at the Central Bank on Dame Street, Liana and Robbie. They were both looking for sleeping bags as they were sleeping rough that night. Liana is 25.
I was in a tent for like a good few months, yeah. It's only recently I started staying back in hostels because I was just so drained. Like, you see, I was in care up until I was 18 and had all these workers when I was 17, and as soon as I turned 18, that's it.
they just drop me. Because I know they have a bad opinion of us, that they're all just the only people that are homeless is junkies and alcohols. And, but it's not like that. Like, I met so many people like that just cannot, for the life of them, get a rented place. Like, people with kids and stuff, like, it's disgraceful. Like,
with no accommodation at the moment, Leanna, like all other people looking for an emergency bed for the night, she has to ring the free phone number, a centrally operated number which looks after the allocation of all emergency beds across Dublin City. It's run by the Dublin Region Homeless Executive. Clients have to ring at 10:30 every night to see if there are beds available.
It's just, it's a joke. Like, it's so draining. I used to say, in a tent, because I was afraid to go into the hostels because some of them were that bad. Like, you wake up in the morning and your runners would be off your feet. And then, like, the girls, like, they're really intimidating. Like, I'm a real quiet girl, so, like, if they think I'm quiet, they'll bully you. All I want is a home. I don't care what it's like, how small it is. I just want somewhere to be able to go home to, like. It's just going to make me upset now.
This desire to find somewhere, anywhere, to call home is shared by most Rough Sleepers I've met on Dublin's streets. While out with the Rough Sleeper team, we also met Robbie, a regular client of Dublin Simon. He's in his 30s and has been homeless for 7 years.
My mother sold the house where I was living and she moved away. I got involved in the wrong crowd. I got involved in wrong stuff. Police ended up raiding my house and I ended up owing money and people ended up coming to my door and that was basically it then, you know. A typical day for me is very, very hard. I've been drinking like a lot now in the last few months, since I got out of prison in September. I have become addicted to tablets since then. There's actually an epidemic in Dublin at the moment with tablets. I heard the expression a couple of years ago that prescription drugs are a nightmare. And when I was on heroin, I never ever thought, like, you know, I thought, yeah, prescription drugs, whatever, yeah, I'm on gear. Like, it's now I understand that prescription drugs are far worse. Because you're out so long every day, you know, sometimes, like, everything's grand, and then sometimes, like, you know, you might have a couple of more extra drinks and you do something stupid and you end up getting charges and it's like a domino effect. It's just like a round circle. Like, it's like you go into prison, you come out of prison. Straight away you go onto the pills, you start drinking, and then it's again, you get more charges, then you're back in prison, you're back in, because you have nowhere to go, you've no house. Like, whereas if you had an apartment to stay in, you know, you'd have some chance, you know, you'd have some chance.
This revolving door or cycle of homelessness is one which can be incredibly hard to break, but turning it into a one-way system is something Dublin Simon is constantly working on. Ushers Island on Dublin's Quays is one of the places which is trying to break the cycle through tackling addiction. 699 people accessed Dublin Simon's treatment and recovery services in 2015 alone. Just away from the chaos of the Quays, there's a sense of calm at Ushers Island. Run by Dublin Simon, it provides residential detox, recovery and aftercare services for homeless people with addiction issues. Ian Grennan is Dublin Simon Operations Manager for Treatment Services.
So the building we're in houses our treatment services. Treatment services has three core services. We have respite, which is a respite and stabilization unit for those living with HIV and Hep C. They come in to get treatment, get back on their medication and get back into a proper routine of eating and sleeping. We then have another service, which is our detox service. Detox is a detox service from alcohol. It's a 3-week stay. They'll come in, they're assessed by a doctor daily, up to daily if needed. They are supervised by a nurse for 24/7 and they will stay with us for 3 weeks. A lot of the clients from there will progress onto our recovery service, which is our third service. And that is to progress the recovery onwards. It's a 6-month stay, some of which is done here in Ushers Island, some of which is done in some of our satellite units around Dublin City.
The Dublin Simon Residential Detoxification Unit at Ushers Island is the only one of its kind in Ireland. It provides a medically assisted alcohol detox service for clients.
So a detox from alcohol would be very, very dangerous. Once they come in and they are seen by the doctor and they're prescribed their medication, the initial 3-4 days are very, very risky in terms of seizures. So we are staffed 24/7 by a nurse.
One person who has been through the 3-week alcohol detox program is Sinead. When I met her at Ushers Island, she was halfway through her 6-month recovery program. Before coming to Ushers Island, she had been sleeping rough for over a year.
I am an addict, and heroin led me down, you know, eventually to homelessness. And when I became homeless, I started drinking. I just didn't use any services or anything for a long, long time. My partner got sick. And he was homeless as well as me. So he ended up in hospital and he was very ill, and we were sort of forced to make a decision. We had to start using the services, and then somebody told us about the Simon. And to be honest with you, only that I had a partner to look after me, I don't know how I would have coped. I don't think I would have been able to cope, to be honest with you. It's very scary, very scary. Being on the streets in itself is dangerous. Being on heroin on the streets is even worse. And having to go through your daily chaotic life of going through that is dangerous. Sleeping rough itself is scary. I used to sleep in Stephen's Green. I slept in a tent for a while there in Stephen's Green, and that was pretty scary. But the reality is there's a lot of homeless people everywhere, and, you know, there's good and bad everywhere, so it can happen to anyone. And people actually, yeah, don't realise that. But addiction makes things so much worse. I was scared a lot of the time, and I remember I was rough sleeping for about 3 weeks, and one morning I woke up and I just looked around where I was, and I says, oh Jesus, it's been 3 weeks, I can't do this anymore, I just can't do this anymore, you know. And after talking to people and saying, how long are you homeless? So 6 months, a year. I just nearly died inside. I nearly crumbled. Because after 3 weeks, I just started crying. I can't do this anymore. So that's when I started drinking. So
Sinead's rock bottom was when her partner got sick and had to be hospitalised. It was then they realised that they both needed to change.
We couldn't have kept going on the way we were going on, but we couldn't see a way out of it at that stage. We were so stuck in what we were doing, we didn't actually know where to go and get help. And then somebody told us about this place. They told us about the Simon. They told us about, they do a proper medical detox. They told us you can go on to recovery. And then it went on from there. Well, when you come into detox, there is a nurse 24 hours a day. You get seen by a doctor. You have a proper medical detox, so you're given your medication and stuff. And it's just the change of going through from a crazy world to coming in, and you have a bed, a warm bed, and you have food and a shower. And most importantly, you have staff around you that actually care. And it's like it's coming from where people are walking by you on the streets to coming into this family. It's really like a family environment, and you're part of this community, and there's not one person there that doesn't care, you know. And at the start you're very mistrustful, because it's hard to, you know, it's hard to come to terms with that. And it's a big change, and I can see it in people now when they come in and they're first week. And we're all there to support each other, and we all learn from each other. And it's really important to feel part of a community. It's really important to feel wanted like that, because you don't feel like that when you're on the streets. You're sort of shunned from society. You do it yourself, but you feel like you're shunned.
Aftercare services like counselling and participation and development courses are provided at Ushers Island. Of all new cases referred to Simon's Sure Step counselling programme in 2015, the biggest reason was due to addiction. Services like this are provided to prevent clients from coming back.
It's very, very important, because otherwise we'll just continually see the same people coming through. So we're dealing with plenty of new clients, plus the ones that are just coming back through the door. So those wraparound services and our aftercare team, they're crucial to making sure that they're not going straight back out the door into homelessness, and to make sure that we can get them into housing, we can get them the support that they need.
You're listening to Finding Home on Documentary on News Talk.
For many, the first step to finding a place to call their own is to get off the streets and into temporary emergency accommodation. One of Dublin Simon's emergency shelters is a 30-bed unit on Harcourt Street where clients can stay for up to 6 months. Services manager is Francis Mons.
We provide 30 beds to single adults, so that's men, women and couples, who are in need of emergency accommodation. And so you would be working with people with a wide spectrum of needs. Someone could be just here because the tenancy or the lease agreement wasn't renewed, to someone who could have been sleeping rough for about 15, 20 years and they're an entrenched rough sleeper and they've been referred in here just for emergency accommodation. Okay. Our main job would be to try and sustain people in this accommodation, which would be just providing a safe as possible environment for them, providing meals, cleaning service, laundry service, trying to meet their physiological needs. And then our main focus then would be to try and assess their needs, put a support plan in place that would get them into permanent accommodation, remove them out of homelessness permanently. We don't want people to stay here in the nicest possible way.
One of Harcourt Street's newer residents is Thomas Kiernan Dunn. He's been homeless for nearly 10 years, and for him, he'd take a hostel over rough sleeping any day.
It's not only the elements you have to worry about when you're sleeping on the streets, do you know what I mean? There's little punks that go around, like, kicking the heads off homeless people. I've woken up to a kick in the face. It's not nice. It's like waking up to a nightmare instead of from a nightmare, you know? I wouldn't choose to sleep on the streets. I'd rather get a hostel. Even if you do have to leave at 10 in the morning and you can't go back till 6 at night, it's a roof over the head.
Thomas found a way to channel his experiences of homelessness, struggles with addiction and his time in jail into something creative. His passion for rapping led him to releasing his very own album in 2016.
I was told I was crap and I couldn't rap. I couldn't do it. So to prove the guy wrong, I did it. I went out and I wrote a few songs, came back, done them in front of him, and he was like, his jaw dropped, he couldn't believe it. And I met a guy called Jack Fleming, and he's a human beatboxer. And we made a little bootleg CD. We called ourselves Man and the Machine. We were together for 3 years, and in that time we sold about 4,000 copies of our bootleg CD. There's a few of the songs from Karma's a Bitch that are on the old album, From the Gutter to the Start. I met a guy called Pat Neary. He organised all the studio and, you know, he put what money he had to it. And between him and Raid, they helped me to get the album done. It's the best therapy in the world, yeah. I mean, I've probably saved thousands on, you know, therapist bills, yeah. It is, it's great, it's a gift.
RAID, or Recovery Through Drama and Education, is an organisation which works with people at all stages of drug recovery to use their creativity to promote positive change. Through the group, Tommy also got his first on-screen break, working on season 5 of Love Hate.
Stuart Carolan was, you know, tinkering with a scene for a, you know, recovery home. So he actually needed recovering addicts. So I wasn't picked straight away. We had to audition. So between 8 of us, we were all handed a script. And I went home and I memorised it word for word. And then when I went back, Maureen said, don't forget your script. I said, I don't need the script. She said, what, you've memorised it already? And I said, yeah. So I got up and I did it. And then she said, right, I'll get back to you and let you know what the story is. So they got back to me and said, yeah, the part is yours. I met Tom Von Lawler briefly, just briefly, hello and goodbye.
A brief hello and goodbye is sometimes all you need. Tommy would love to continue working on his music and acting, and even told me he has Hollywood in his sights. But a more immediate goal is to find a home.
I'm approved for the HAP scheme, so if I can get that, I'll get my own place and we'll go from there, yeah? Oh, I'll be made up. Yeah, be made up. Be in my element. I do it up nice and make it my own. Because you can't make these places your own, you know? It's not like a home. So I'd like to make it like a home.
Another client who uses his art to document his experience of homelessness is Daniel, who we met at Dublin Simon's Social Club. The social club runs twice a week from Simon's offices at Capel Street and gives clients a chance to work on social skills and combat social isolation. Daniel, who has been coming to the social club for 3 years, runs a Facebook page called Mend Era to raise awareness for homelessness and to showcase the photos and videos he's taken to capture and document the homeless experience in modern Ireland.
The videos are meant to actually, there was two ideas behind them. One was because of the images on mobile phones, it was to kind of help with younger people to relate to imagery and make videos, keep them out of trouble. The other one was to keep a record on what was going on around me. So in the last 3 to 4 years, I've collected maybe 15,000 photographs, maybe 400 or 500 videos of different things with homelessness. And I've been going around the country documenting thousands of empty homes. I mean, why are they sitting there empty? Why are you saying there's 7,000 people homeless, 2,500 children, and all these homes are sitting there? Nobody ever looks up to over a shop to see the empty flats that are up over shops. You just don't look. You're all on autopilot, where you get up in the mornings. It's your job, you have to get hair ready. You have to get out the door, travel to work, listen to the radio, you know? And then you're going for your dinner, get back home, meet your friends, go to yoga, do whatever it is, and it's back on to the next day. I get to wake up in the mornings, look at the sun coming up, take pictures of it, walk around, watch people.
Daniel also helps set up projects for other people experiencing homelessness, and he sees creativity as hugely important for expression and for healing.
When I worked in archaeology and other jobs, I used to do photography through that. So when I came out with drugs and ended up on the streets here in Dublin, I took back up the camera. One thing about these little places like the Simon, they have little art classes or somewhere for people to get things out of them, you know. Mm-hmm. When I go into the homeless services like Merchant Quay, I see a lot of artwork that's done by ex-addicts and they're always producing great stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like there's something that's locked up inside that needs to get out, especially when you're dealing with this stuff. You have to detach from certain emotional states when you're doing this. You lose empathy. Mm-hmm. You lose your respect for society as a whole. You see what society is really like, the way it ignores itself when it ignores people.
The next step on from emergency accommodation for those in the cycle of homelessness is to find something more permanent. However, for some, living totally independently will never be an option for a lot of reasons, including physical health, addiction or mental health issues. Dublin Simon's Hazelwood House provides supported long-term accommodation for those unable to live independently. One of the 19 self-contained apartments belongs to Donal. He's been at Hazelwood House for 7 years.
I was diagnosed with mental illness at 21, but I believe I had been unwell for some years prior to that. No specific direction really in my life, although I managed to get a general arts degree, I had no specific direction in my life. It can happen to anyone. People would suggest that when you have it made, it cannot happen to you. But I would imagine even royals could go homeless, you know, if they had bad luck.
Despite all Donal's bad luck in life, he's still hopeful for the future and grateful for having Hazelwood House.
Yeah, obviously, you know, you'll have the usual problems which you'd have anywhere. You know, you're not going to get on with everybody. You know, you're going to have difficulties. But it's something I wouldn't have ever expected that I'd have at one point. So as bitter as I may be about this, that and the other, I'm actually quite grateful.
Getting into long-term accommodation is a significant step for anyone in the cycle of homelessness, but for some, it is literally a lifeline, as Joanne, who I met at Hazelwood House, told me.
I'll be quite honest with you. Before I got here, I was given up the will to live. To be honest with you, if I happened to get here, going from hostel to hostel for the past 13 years with my daughters, any help you need here, they'll get it for you. Any help, no matter what it is, counsellor, we have beautiful breakfast in the mornings. You know, absolutely brilliant. When we have the fry up then only once a week, that's Sunday.
Anne Jordan, manager of Hazelwood House, told me that getting their clients back into the community is incredibly important to them.
This is medium supported housing, so there are staff from 8:30 to 7 in the evening, Monday to Sunday. We've 4 staff and 2 full-time volunteers. I suppose we assist people with their support needs in terms of independent living skills, hygiene, cooking. We try and run programs in-house. We link them in with other programs outside of the service as well.
Getting into employment is also an incredibly important step for people who've experienced homelessness to integrate back into the community. Recognising this, Dublin Simon launched a pilot scheme 18 months ago called the Community Employment Engagement Programme. Mairead Feehy is the CE Engagement Supervisor.
So there's kind of 3 phases to the programme, and the first phase is very much about getting ready to work. So it'd be very much communication skills or, you know, computer skills, self-assertiveness, personal development, whatever the particular participant is interested in. So the 19 and a half hours each week is tailored around what the individual themselves want. And then in phase 2, the guys all move into internal work placements within Dublin Simon. So we have people working in our warehouse, in our treatment services, in our shops. We have people working in catering, groundskeeping. And then in phase 3, it's kind of about moving on into mainstream employment or getting work experience with external employers. So with a view, always with a view to moving on.
Paul is the first person to complete the CE programme and is now a full-time employee of Dublin Simon. He's working in one of their temporary accommodation hostels.
There's a lot more hurdles I would have had to face. People can be judgmental because of my criminal past, do you know what I mean? Because of convictions, do you know what I mean? I wasn't saying I was a mastermind criminal, but because of my criminal convictions, do you know what I mean? And the lack of belief in myself to go for certain jobs, do you know what I mean? I probably would have just settled for whatever. Just the reality of it, like, I mean, it helped for other people to push me on and to support me and show me what was available, like, do you know what I mean? I started originally working in ushers, and I had to do up my CV a couple of weeks ago again, and I couldn't even put everything into it. Do you know what I mean? All the stuff we've done, like, I mean, and even looking back at it myself and seeing all the stuff we've done, like, I mean, the addiction studies level 5, I've done that in Ballymun. I've done security management level 6. So I've done a bit of security as well. And then I've just done all the training within the Simon community as well. Like, do you know what I mean? And suicide awareness, there was loads of them. Do you know what I mean? There was a lot.
Through the HAP scheme and Dublin Simon, Paul now also has a place to call home. And having experienced homelessness, spent time in prison and had addiction issues himself, Paul feels he'll have a lot to give his new job where clients may be going through the same issues.
I might have been in a hostel, but I was where they were, like, do you know what I mean, inside their head. I know what it's like, do you know what I mean? And I'd have no problem, obviously, I'd have no problem sharing my story with people, do you know what I mean, if I felt I could help someone. If I was to sit around all day and do nothing, my purpose of life wouldn't feel as valid or whatever. Like, I think it's very important to get out and to be doing a bit. Do you know what I mean? Like, I worked years ago, like, do you know what I mean? And for a couple of months, then I get sacked. Do you know what I mean? Or leave. Do you know what I mean? I never really wanted to work. Do you know what I mean? And now I'm thinking about going back and doing more college next year. Do you know what I mean? After a year or so. I suppose for me, it's hard for me to see it in myself, but I suppose the last few weeks it has improved, like, it has helped, like, do you know what I mean? So it is good, and come here, I think it's good for anyone as well coming behind me to see that it is possible if you, and it's not exactly hard work, do you know what I mean? It's possible. If I can do it, anyone can do it, do you know what I mean? That's not putting myself down, it's the reality of it, like, do you know what I mean? As I said, I was going around looking at places with no carpets in them, going up with the cash and trying to get them, trying to rent them, and thought that's all I'm going to get. Felt like I was never going to get it. I certainly didn't think I'd be getting a good job, like, do you know what I mean?
And you have a job and a
house. A job and a house, yeah, and opportunities as well, like, do you know what I mean? It's good for me, for my self-esteem as well, like, do you know what I mean, to do it.
A second chance is all most people experiencing homelessness want, especially when it's affecting their children. Kira is a mum of 2 and spent a full year in emergency accommodation with her children and partner. She told me how a cut to her housing allowance and an increase in her rent led to the family losing their home.
For 8 years, me and my partner were private renting,
And we basically, my partner got a job. So he was in full-time work. And then 6 months later, the social welfare decided to means test me. So that was fine. Obviously, like, you know, I can't get a full payment for my partner's working. That's understandable. But they cut not only my money, but they cut, like, my rent allowance. And, yeah, basically then, and then my landlady turned around and said, I want to put up the rent. She wanted to put up from 925 to 1200 in one go, in a text message, first of all. Didn't even give me proper notice. Said she wanted it the next month. I panicked. Sure, like you know what I mean? I have two kids. Like, what am I supposed to do? Who am I supposed to go to? There was just no help. So we went to the council, explained to the council, and basically they kept on saying, do you not have any friends to stay with? Do you not have this to stay with? We were like, no, I wouldn't be sitting here with you crying if I had somewhere else to go. So basically then they said, okay, well, you have to wait till you come back to us when you drop the keys off. And we'll try to find you somewhere. They don't help you until you're physically on the street.
For many families in Dublin who receive rental allowance or who are on the Housing Assistance Payment Scheme or HAP scheme, finding a property to rent is near impossible. A Simon Community study for 2017 found that 88% of rental properties were out of reach for those on rental supplement or on the HAP scheme. This is what has led to the massive increase in families needing emergency accommodation, which in itself can be a nightmare to find.
Went there and told her that, right, that we've given the keys back. Now, he said to us, he brought us into a private room, don't tell anybody about this. This we only give these out to every 40 people. This is a number. Ring it when you find a hotel. Don't tell them you're homeless. Just tell them that you need Dublin City Council are paying for it. Do you take payment? Had to go and ring around to look for somewhere, and we couldn't find anywhere. So the Monday came then, and I had to give the keys back. So I gave the keys back, and basically they said, well, keep ringing the number, keep looking for hotels, and hope for the best. So I did. I did find somewhere, and I had to tell them that my house went on fire, and that's why Dublin City Council are paying for the payment. Imagine just not having a home. Imagine going to work and then coming home and you have nowhere to go. Like, it's... You know, especially when you have a family, I wouldn't care as much if it was just me and him. It wouldn't have affected me that much. But because I had two kids and trying to explain to them, and you just feel like a failure because they're your responsibility. Mm. So what can you do? Sorry.
Kira's daughter was 5 when they first went into the B&B and her son was just 3.
They just thought it was a holiday first. You know, and then obviously eventually I had to tell my oldest, Jade, that, you know, we can't go back to our old house and this is where we have to stay. For one, like, how do you explain to them? Because they don't understand. And then Jade used to go to school. Eventually I got her into school and she's, you know, I live in a hotel, in a B&B. You know, and that's what she used to tell her friends. Like, and it's sad. That's sad that she had to start school saying I live in a B&B. Some days I didn't even have enough money to get a takeaway for all of us. So the kids would eat, we wouldn't eat. You know what I mean? The weight just fell off me. Like, my son still doesn't eat properly. I still can't get him to eat dinner. So, like, he's under his weight, you know, for a normal 4-year-old.
After 12 long months, Kira finally got the phone call she was waiting for.
Oh, I was actually, of course, I got the phone call when I was on my own. That's first of all, I only had my son with me and I was just like screaming. I was like, we got a house. I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. And I was just like, oh my God, okay. And then a week later, we got the letter with the address on it. And of course I had to come over and have a look. Straight over I was, over the... And then we were like, okay, I was saying to my parent, I was like, this is not our house. This is not the house. I think they got this wrong. Couldn't believe our luck. Like, as I said, I was near crying going around, walking around. It's so important. It's so important for the children because now they're in the school now, they're settled. She comes home, she has her dinner. You know, I have the washing machine there, of luxury.
Not being able to afford a mortgage hasn't just forced people into emergency accommodation, but it's also led to the boomerang generation. Research in April 2017 carried out by Savills Estate Agency found a quarter of couples in Ireland had an adult child living with them.
The banks, they want like 30 grand deposit. You know, where does people get that from? And then there's other people that not only that are not even on going into emergency accommodation, they're living at home with their parents back home. And that's even harder because they have one room. You know, you don't have your own privacy.
Houses, getting homeless people into them and preventing people from losing theirs in the first place are key factors for Dublin Simon's ongoing work. CEO of Dublin Simon, Sam McGuinness, says houses are key to tackling the homeless crisis going forward.
One great thing that I've seen, I haven't seen before, is the local authorities and government itself, named the minister and his plan, have put energy into it that I haven't seen before. So there are lots of individual things that are happening that are kind of tied together, but they'll all have to happen together before something significant is going to happen. And we really need more homes. The problem is huge in terms of the accommodation shortfall.
Like everyone I met on this documentary, I asked Kira, who waited over a year in emergency accommodation for a place to call her own for herself and her kids, what the word home means to her.
It means everything to us, because it's our own. We don't have to move again. Like, that's just even heaven to my ears, I have to say that. I want to say the people that are still in there, like, it is a happy ending at the end. You will get that home that you can call your own for life.
Finding Home was presented and produced by Rachel Ryan. Sound production was by Lachlan Hart. The programme was made with the help of the Dublin Simon community and was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee. If you are affected by any of the topics raised in the documentary or are at risk of homelessness, get advice and help at dubsimon.ie.